Hello, listeners. This is Phil Brown, and I'm going to be reading Chapter 3 from my contemporary fantasy book, Light Runner, Book 1 of the Light Runner series. You can find me at www.philipbrownauthor.com, that's Philip with one L, on Twitter at philipbrown1, and on Facebook at the Light Runner series. Thanks for listening, and here we go. Light Runner by Philip Brown, Chapter 3. "Your lips blue," Vadoma said. "Yeah," Dara replied. "My suit's wet. My hair's wet. I'm cold. Come, I have extra robe." The light from the helicopter's search beam swept over the stairs as Vadoma labored up the steps ahead of Dara. Inside Vadoma's apartment, the window curtains were drawn, and a green Tiffany lamp cast a warm glow in the room. A paisley fabric covered a long sofa. Vadoma clicked the deadbolt on the front door and leaned against the door to catch her breath. Vadoma could hear voices and the static of a police radio in the courtyard below. Vadoma went back into the apartment and returned a moment later. "Here," she said, and handed Dara a red terry cloth robe with a hood. She looked down towards Dara's knee. "Go, change out of vet clothes. I fix knee better."
It's already fixed," Dara said.
She lifted her knee to show Vadoma.
"Huh, amazing what a little first aid cream can do."
Vadoma glanced down at Dara's knee. Her eyes widened in disbelief. "Yeah," Dara thought, "you're not the only one who's surprised." Dara went into the bathroom and changed into the robe. After she checked the pocket of her shorts to make sure the bracelet was still there, she left her wet clothes on the bathroom floor and picked up her skateboard. Moments later, she emerged, clutching her board and wearing Vadoma's robe. She slipped her cell phone into a pocket and sat on the sofa, board upside down on her lap. A cracked leather chair next to the couch faced a TV in the corner, and a little beyond that, Dara could see a plastic bead curtain separating the kitchen from the living room. Large moving boxes were stacked in a corner. Dara guessed that, by now, Vadoma must have been living here for over a month, and thought it odd that she hadn't unpacked everything. She was old, though. Might take her longer. Vadoma came in from the kitchen and handed Dara a mug. It was hot, and a large crystal poked out of it.
"What's this?" Dara asked. "Mint tea, with piece of rock sugar."
Dara eased herself into the brown leather chair and eyed the door. The tea tasted good, warm and refreshing.
"Thanks," Dara said.
She set the mug down on a coffee table covered with a rectangular piece of red cloth. Two thick candles, dried wax pooling around them, were placed on the cloth. A deck of playing cards with an intricate design lay face down next to one of the candles. Vadoma reached back and loosened her hair, then shook her head to let it hang loose and free. At that moment, her hair looked like a snowfall in the wind, Dara thought, or one of those Christmas snow globes when you turn it upside down and white flakes drift through the liquid. She glanced at Vadoma's green eyes again and was surprised to see that they no longer bulged like fish eyes, but were soft and alert. Dara looked down, picked at the paisley fabric on the couch, and wondered what to say when the truth was that she didn't want to say anything.
"Thanks for letting me hang out here," she offered after a minute of awkward silence, unable to shake from her mind the bracelet and the police, a dead body, and the helicopter's blinding white light.
She felt a growing sense of helpless anger, missed her dad, and looked down at the skateboard in her lap for comfort. She'd painted the bottom of it black and plastered the nose and tail with stickers. One of them said, "Ninja on board." Another sticker showed a walking skateboard, and under it were the words, "Evil Eye." She had a sticker of a black skull with green lipstick. And 6 weeks ago, when she'd gotten a new board to replace her old one, she'd covered her mom's picture in plastic wrap, glued it underneath the nose of her deck, and covered it with a square of grip tape so that it was hidden in front of the truck and wheels, a secret stowaway where no one could see it. Her eyes flicked to her knee, and she thought of SpongeBob Band-Aids, kisses to a wound. Then Dara raised her head and stared out the window, wishing she could ride her skateboard down the street, away from here and far, far away from all of it. The incident with her mom had happened over 3 years ago, on a Labor Day weekend. 2.5 days of camping with the parents, a final summer ordeal, before Dara could escape into school in the 8th grade. During the car ride, she'd listened to music, stared out the window at the passing ocean, then back at her mom's head. Like Dara, her mom had thick, curly hair, but she also wore a short-billed gray cap that looked, Dara thought, like a train engineer's. When they got to Carlsbad State Beach, Dara grudgingly helped set up the campsite. As her mom leaned over the picnic table to straighten the floral-patterned oilcloth, Dara once more caught sight of the small scar at the base of her mother's throat. Dara struggled to help her dad snap together some tent poles. "I put up plenty of tents in Iraq," her dad said. "Come on, this one's about as hard as operating a TV remote." A bead of sweat rolled down his brow. Despite the fresh, salty wind that blew from the sea, Dara felt stifled. She had to get away from her parents. This was supposed to be a vacation, not Chorville. "I'm going to check out the camp store." She pulled her black skull saber over her head and grabbed her skateboard, a recent birthday gift she'd implored her parents to get for her. She started to pedal her board along the narrow road that wound through the campground. "Wrong way!" Mom yelled after her. Dara looked back. Her mom had taken a few steps out into the road and was motioning Dara back. Dara kept on pedaling and increased her pace. If she could just get away from them for a little while, she glanced over her shoulder. Her mom had taken a few commanding steps after her. Dara pedaled harder, then set both feet on the board and stuck out her arms for balance. As she rounded a bend, she looked up to find her way blocked by 2 boys several years older. She braked, and as she did so, lost her footing and stumbled. The board shot out from under her and rolled towards the 2 boys, coming to rest near their feet. One of them had a buzz cut and hadn't shaved. He flipped aside a cigarette, took a swig from a beer can, belched, then handed off the can to the other boy. He leaned down to pick up the skateboard, then held it in his hands and turned it over, examining it.
An element, he said. Nice. You turning pro or something?
Both boys laughed, and the one with the buzz cut held the board out to her, a peace offering. Dara breathed a sigh of relief and took a few sheepish steps. She reached out a hand to take her board, but the boy pulled it away at the last minute. "Psych," he said. He repeated the same move, held out the board while she grabbed for it, then once more pulled it back. The third time, she lunged, tripped, and almost fell.
"Ha! Good thing you're wearing your helmet," the buzzcut boy said.
Both boys burst out laughing again, but then stopped short as their eyes focused on something behind Dara. She worried they were trying to trick her again, but turned her head enough to cast a quick backward glance. It was her mother. Her mom, stout and short, wearing the engineer's cap, denim capri pants, and dark, earth-colored hiking sandals, strode toward them. At that moment, Dara wanted to become invisible. She'd rather have dealt with the 2 boys than have her mom here right now. She just knew her mom was about to take her by the arm and haul her back to the campsite. But instead, her mother marched up to the boy with a skateboard and wrenched it out of his hand. The boy took a step back, and his eyes flared with anger.
"Mom, don't!"
Dara pleaded, humiliated by her mother's intrusion, but also afraid of what the boys might do.
"Come on, let's go."
A few campers had gathered by the side of the road to watch. The boy with a buzz cut looked around at the small audience, then thrust his chin out and took a step toward Dara's mom.
She lifted the board, swatted at the air in front of him, and the boy stopped. "Don't mess with things that don't belong to you," she said. Her long, thick hair bobbed as she shook the skateboard for emphasis. "And one more thing, don't you ever mess with my girl like that." A few bystanders applauded. A car honked for them to get out of the road, and the boys retreated, melting away into a nearby campsite. Later, after dinner and a shower, Dad went to get wood for a campfire while Dara and her mom sat on some large rocks by the ocean. The sun was setting. The western sky had turned burnt orange, and the ocean surface was the color of orchid. "Take our picture," her mom said. A request, not an order. The air smelled of brine and kelp. Dara pulled out her cell phone, held it at arm's length, leaned into her mom, and tapped the photo button. A wave crashed onto a nearby rock, sending up a sparkle of white spray in the sunset. After Dara pocketed the phone, her mother put an arm around Dara's shoulders and stroked her upper arm. Dara rested her head against her mom and breathed in the scent of her hair. Dara was awakened by the sound of a match being struck, followed by the soft sizzling of two candle wicks. She opened her eyes, confused at the sight of the candle's glow and the soft green light of a Tiffany lamp. She lay on the couch, covered by a blue blanket. Where was she? And then it hit her. The bracelet. The dead guy. The cops. Dad. She sat bolt upright. Where's Dad? Shouldn't he be here already? She looked at her cell phone. It was a little after midnight. She called her dad's phone. Voicemail. Vedoma emerged from the kitchen, went to the window, and peeked through the blinds, then sat next to Dara. She tugged the blanket around Dara's shoulders. Dara glanced once again at the square of grip tape underneath her board, then edged nearer to Vedoma. "You want to ask something?" Dara felt a hand stroking her back. "I will try to help you. Tell me question, and I can read cards." So they weren't playing cards. Dara suspected that Vedoma was trying to fill the time, to take her mind off the present. Dara looked down at the coffee table. Had the cards been moved to the other side while she'd slept? She shook her head and glanced down at her cell again. Where was her dad? She wondered if she should go back down and talk to the police. That is, if they were still there. Dara stood and headed for the door. "Stay inside," Vedoma said. "You must let the police finish." Dara peered between two slats of the wooden blinds. It looked like the corpse was gone, but a half dozen police milled around the courtyard. Someone was cleaning up the blood. She sat back down on the couch and took a deep breath as the candles' flickering flames threw shadows on the wall. Dara's words came spilling out. "The cops told me to wait, and now it's been like several hours and I can't reach my dad. What's going on?" She looked at Vedoma for reassurance, as somehow this woman with silver rings on gnarled fingers might fathom answers from the soft green light and dancing shadows. "That is a big question," Vedoma said. She reached to pull the deck of cards closer. "Let me try to read answers. Here," she said, and turned over the top card. "This is your past. Start with past, because out of that comes now." Three silver swords pierced a red heart. "Three of swords," Vedoma said. She looked up from the card, and Dara thought she caught a hint of sympathy in her eyes. "It could be you received painful news, or perhaps," Vedoma took a deep breath, "lost someone? Someone to cause your heart pain?" Dara was silent and thought, "Does she think I lost a boyfriend?" Or maybe Vedoma knew. After all, she'd moved into the same apartment building and might have heard. Vedoma looked at Dara with steady eyes, waiting for her to respond. I'm okay, Dara said, blinking her eyes. The long-ago memory leapt from a place where it had lain hidden, her head against Mom's chest, the gentle pulse as Dara's small finger traced the tiny ancient scar above her mother's heart. Somehow, Vadoma said, there is connection to now. She turned over a second card, placing it next to the first. Present condition. This is right now. She glanced towards the window. The card showed two dogs baying at a full moon while a crab made its way out of the water. Moon card, Vadoma said. Moon is deep. Your past. Secret truths coming out of water. Dara thought of how the moon had looked earlier in the evening, rising up out of the twilight while she'd backstroked in the pool. But I thought you said it was the present, she said, like right now. Yeah, it is present, but your past, she pointed back at the heart-piercing swords, is making this happen now. Perhaps you cannot see something or someone that is hidden. Huh? That is totally crazy. Moon does not make sense. It is feeling. You must trust. Here. She placed her hand above Dara's heart. Pay close attention to messages. Dara looked at Vadoma's eyes, staring back at her. Listen with feelings, Vadoma said. Dara was on the verge of explaining about the bracelet she'd found in the swimming pool. Had it really healed her knee? Or was the wound not as bad as she'd thought? The bracelet was still in her board shorts on the floor of Vadoma's bathroom, and Dara decided that there was no reason to tell. This is last one, the future, Vadoma said, turning over the third card. It comes out of past and present both. She moved the card so Dara could see, then positioned it next to the other two. Judgment card, she said. There was a note of surprise in her voice, as though an unexpected guest had just walked in. Dara moved to the edge of the couch and stared at the card. A sea upon which the gray and naked dead stood erect in floating caskets. The hands of resurrected men, women, and children were raised upwards toward a red-winged, golden-haired angel blowing a trumpet. It means you leave past behind you. Vadoma's voice had softened. You must make a big choice, she added, in order to see what is hidden beneath surface. Dara thought once more of the black-bottomed swimming pool and the watery depths in which a silver and gold bracelet had shimmered. Dara tried to call her father, but got his voicemail again. A knock at the door. Vadoma looked through the peephole, opened the door, and then stepped aside. It was Ramirez. We've been trying to reach your father again, he said, standing framed in the doorway. We even sent a squad car out to the base, but he'd already left. Apparently he signed out with a government vehicle. We don't know where he is or why he's not here yet. Oh, Dara said. Does that mean he's okay, or what? We don't know, replied Ramirez. He could have had car troubles or something, and that's why he's driving the government vehicle. But you think he would call? Dara thought she caught a note of suspicion in Ramirez's voice. Yeah, she said. He's always having problems with his car. We still need to talk to your father about this break-in and everything, Ramirez said. So the minute you hear from him, you need to give me a call, okay? He handed Dara an official-looking card with a phone number. But just in case, do you have a relative in the area? Your mother, perhaps? I don't like the sound of just in case, she thought, and shook her head. Ramirez's eyebrows arched. Anybody else? Not really, Dara answered. There's my grandma, but she's in a nursing home. Right away, she wished she hadn't said anything and added, but I don't know how to reach her or anything. Okay, we'll work on it. We'll need to contact Children's Services to take you, at least temporarily. They might have to find an emergency placement for you. Ramirez looked at Vadoma. Ma'am, will you be able to keep her a bit longer? Maybe until the social worker, you know.
Vedoma nodded. Yeah, she is welcome to stay here.
Ramirez turned back to Dara.
Are you sure you don't know the unsub?
Huh?
Dara looked down at the moon card, then glanced back up.
The man who died down there, the unknown subject.
He nodded back towards the courtyard.
No, not a lie, she thought. I don't know him.
You're sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Like I said, I just saw him on the street earlier today.
He had this note. Ramirez handed Dara a sealed plastic bag. Inside was a pink paper. Dara recognized the message she'd left her father saying she was in the pool.
I don't get it.
Her hand shook, and she handed the plastic bag back to Ramirez.
I left that note for my dad, but I don't understand. Why did that dude have it?
We don't know.
A hint of frustration crept into Ramirez's voice. Let me know if you hear from your dad. We have to talk to him. You've got my number. The site investigation's almost wrapped up, so you sit tight until Children's Services contacts you or your father gets here, okay?
Dara nodded and could almost see him going through his list.
Dead body? Check. Preserve evidence? Check. Wrap up crime scene? Check. Dispose of kid? Check.
Ramirez closed the apartment door, and Dara heard his footsteps recede down the stairs.
2 minutes later, her cell vibrated with a text from her dad's phone.
Hey.
She typed,
Hey, Dad, when will you be here?
And then clicked send.
A quick reply,
Where are you? It looks like you're home, but...
Hadn't the police informed her dad the apartment was a crime scene? And why didn't he answer her question? She felt a mixture of irritation and relief.
I'm with...
She was about to add the word, Vedoma. The apartment right below theirs and probably indistinguishable from apartment 304 on her dad's GPS locator. But something about his text made her stop. It's true that she couldn't remember telling her dad where she was. She'd talked to him before Vedoma agreed to let her hang out in her apartment, but Ramirez had said earlier that he was going to tell her dad where she'd be. The cops wouldn't leave her with someone without informing her father, unless they couldn't reach him again. Dara typed the words, a friend, instead of Vedoma, then added, Did you play that new CD in your car? Like she told Ramirez, her dad's car had some problems. One of those was a broken CD player.
Yeah,
came the reply.
Who's your friend?
She stared at the question. Her thumbs trembled as she typed,
From school, we're studying.
A moment later,
Good. Where are you?
She knew that if this were Dad, he'd type ha-ha as soon as she said she was studying, because it would have to be a joke.
Someone is trying to find me, she thought, with Dad's cell, but it's not Dad.
Dara's inside shook, but she knew she had to think straight. She couldn't afford to mess this up. She slid her phone back into the pocket of Vedoma's robe.
Vedoma, I need to go get some things out of my apartment. That was my dad texting me.
She steadied a hand against her thigh.
He's going to be a little bit longer. I gotta get my swim clothes from your bathroom.
Vedoma looked at her, concern in her green eyes.
I'm fine, Dara said. Don't worry.
The phone vibrated in the pocket of the robe.
Dara went down the short hall to Vedoma's bathroom, closed the door, and looked around. Toilet, small sink, bathtub, and a clear shower curtain. Dara's shorts and one piece were where she'd left them, in a pile on the floor. She pushed open the shower curtain. A small, square, frosted window above the shower looked too small for her to climb through. Besides, she was on the second floor. The phone vibrated again, and she looked at the screen. Two texts. Tell me where you are. And I'm worried about you. On a shelf behind the toilet was a small bronze statue. Some weird lady, Dara thought, with multiple arms inside of a circle. Dara put down the toilet lid, sat on it, and deliberated. After a few moments, she stood, picked up her still damp swim clothes,
and felt in the pocket of the shorts to make sure the bracelet was still there. She remembered how it had seemed to glow with a life of its own above her knee, beside the undulating water of the pool. Once again, she wondered if that had been real or a figment of her imagination. She removed the bracelet from her shorts and dropped it into the pocket of the robe with her cell phone. Then she caught sight of herself in the mirror. Her face looked tense and pale. Green-streaked hair strands matted against her cheeks. She brushed back her hair, managed a smile. "Hey," she whispered to her reflection. She came out of the bathroom, still in Vadoma's robe, holding her damp clothes. "I'm going to get some of my stuff." I feel like crap for lying, Dara thought, but maybe someday I'll make it up to her. She grabbed her skateboard.
"You must be careful," Vadoma said. "Don't fall again. I maybe cannot pick you up next time."
It sounded like lame advice. Or maybe Vadoma knew the truth anyway. Before Dara left, Vadoma touched Dara's face, caressed her cheek, and then placed something in Dara's hand. A card. At the same time, Dara felt something vibrate from the pocket of the robe. Was she getting another text? She stared at Vadoma's long silver hair, blinked a couple of times, and turned away. "Be right back," she said. Dara felt an evening chill in the smoke-scented air and pulled the hood of Vadoma's robe over her head. There was no sign of the police, but she hunched over and snuck up the flight of stairs to her apartment. The police tape had been removed, and she nudged the door open. The lights were off, but the room was bathed in a ghost-like glow from the computer screen. She took a couple of steps toward the kitchen, then stopped. Was there someone else still in the apartment? She tried to listen, but all she heard was the sound of her own heartbeat. She glanced at the computer. Craigslist. Idaho? Was her dad getting transferred again? An outside light illuminated her bedroom enough to see that the dresser drawers had been pulled out and dumped, clothes strewn about the carpet, and her backpack emptied. School stuff, spiral notebooks, a thick English anthology, graphing calculator, lay scattered near her backpack. If the police had been in here, she thought, it might have appeared to be a normal teenager's bedroom, except that someone else had done this. She slipped out of Vadoma's robe, then pulled on a pair of desert camo cargo pants and a black hooded sweatshirt. She picked up clothes from the floor and crammed them in the backpack, and then stuffed the phone charger into the front pocket. Taking the bracelet out of the pocket of Vadoma's robe, she put it in her pants pocket, and then tugged on a pair of fingerless bike gloves. She carried her backpack and peeked in Dad's bedroom. Nothing was disturbed. Like normal. She dragged a chair over to his closet and stepped up to push on a square access panel in the closet ceiling. She moved the panel to the side, felt around with her hand, and she located the Pringles canister and pulled it down. She shook the contents onto the floor. She jumped from the chair, scooped up all the money that had spilled out, and stuffed it into the front pocket of her backpack. In the kitchen, Dara managed to find some cookies, a couple of apples, a banana, juice boxes, and energy bars, all of which she loaded into her backpack. She walked back into her room and got her skateboard. Her cell phone vibrated with a new text from Dad's phone. "Where are you?" She slid the cell into a back pocket of her cargo pants. Dara slipped out of the apartment with her skateboard under one arm, her backpack over her shoulder, and Vadoma's robe bundled under her other arm. Vadoma's light was still on, and Dara draped the robe over the railing outside Vadoma's door. Then she remembered the card Vadoma had given her. She ran back to retrieve it from the pocket of the robe and shot a quick glance at it. A sword. She squeezed it into her backpack. The police were gone, but broken yellow caution tape still dangled from the bottom of the stair railing near where she tripped over the dead body. In the space of an evening, her world had collapsed, reduced to the size of a backpack. Someone had her dad's cell, and maybe her dad too. Now they were after her. Vadoma had told Dara she'd face a big choice, But there seemed to be no choice at all, no option other than to run. Sheltering in place, like the lockdown drills they practiced at school, meant she'd just be trapped, easy prey. As she crossed the rear of the courtyard, though, she realized that one choice she did have was where to go from here. The beach wasn't far, and there was a small park next to it, but it was cooler now, and she realized she had no blanket, no sleeping bag. She moved towards the back alley and then out to the side street. Parked next to the curb was a pickup truck with a locked toolbox in the bed, the words AAA Contractors on the door panel. Her eyes brushed over the truck, surveying the street. Then her gaze came back to the words on the truck and an idea hit her. 2, maybe 3 miles away was an unfinished housing development of half-built tract homes. She could find temporary refuge there, and maybe there'd even be a porta-potty. It would be home for at least a night and buy her some time. Electric wires buzzed overhead. Somewhere in the distance, an approaching car. A dog's barking. "Dad, where are you?" She set down her backpack and took out an apple, then tugged her knit cap tight onto her head. Out-of-control ideas raced through her mind. That dude with a serpent tat on his leg had been watching her, and now he's dead. "Someone's trying to find me," she thought. "Where do I run? How can I hide?" At the same time, she felt free, cut loose from her past. Dara cast a glance towards the darkened hills and saw orange flames. She took a deep breath, zipped up her backpack, swung it over her shoulder, and stepped onto her skateboard. She took a bite out of her apple and pushed off down the sidewalk, the wheels grinding out a concrete rhyme. Clickety-clack, won't be back. Clickety-clack, can't come back. You've just listened to Chapter 3 of Light Runner by Philip Brown, available on Amazon. You can contact me at phil@philipbrownauthor.com, Philip with one L. Next up, I'll be reading Chapter 4, in which Dara discovers why she has discovered this armband and what it's called. Thanks again, and so long for now.